Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Greg Blaze, and today we'll be continuing what is thankfully becoming an annual episode about the Daphne Zeppos Teaching Award winners, current and past, and the award itself. I've got a couple guests with me on the lines today that fit that criteria. I've got the 2014 winner, Emily Sharton, on one line. How are you, Emily?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, very good. Always nice to have you on board. I have another Emily with me in the studio, Emily Acosta, who produces the show.
Hi, guys.
So we're going to have to keep you all separated. I will refer to you all by appropriate Emily-ness. And on the other line, I've got Tom Perry, cheeseman extraordinaire for Potash Market in Chicago. Congratulations, Tom. You are the 2015 DZTA winner. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on. I was lucky enough to run into Tom at the ACS after he received his award, but I was physically and emotionally drained from that. So I want to apologize for my lethargic behavior at the Festival of Cheese. I have been in that room all day setting up cheese, but I came back to the East Coast, you know, got a blood transfusion and a couple of other, you know, procedures, and I'm ready to go. So hopefully I'll have a little bit more better energy for you today. Thanks for your time, Tom.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to talk just a tiny bit about the DZTA before we got started. I'm really lucky. I've seen all three of the awards given out, and I was at the event, the DZTA event. When talking with a guy, with Mo Frechette, who is just this awesome guy that you guys know, who's just behind the scenes guy that is the president of the board, the DZTA board, raises all the money or helps to raise all the money, and we were just talking about how really great it is that this award is perpetuating itself, you know, and how it's gotten, you know, it's the first, you know, gal, Jess Perry was the pioneer, and then it was Emily, and now there's you. And I'm just really happy and inspired by that, and that this award is, you know, it just keeps going. And yeah, and I really hope, you know, that you really make the most of it. I'm sure you're pretty stoked, Tom, to get the award.
I am incredibly excited. It's been a month, because I learned about it just about a month before ACS. It's been an incredible ride, and, you know, partly because of the fact that it's Daphne, and partly because of the fact that, you know, just who's involved, so many people have just been so generous with what they've been offering in terms of information and in terms of activities and ways to further my vision.
It's pretty awesome. Now, when we're going to come back, I want to talk to you probably in the second half of our show at length about your plans for the future. But I want to talk to Miss Sharton for a moment first. You know, she's was the reigning champ, you know, the last scholarship winner. And I wanted to get a recap of your experience. I remember when we talked last year about this time, I was listening to the episode, and you were a little bit uncertain. I was pushing you for plans, and you didn't have any at the time. I assume that all worked itself out, right?
It did, yes. Yeah. It has been an amazing year, a very full year. I have worked on this project pretty much since that time that we talked. The actual trip that I went on lasted for about 6 weeks in the months of April and into May. My project, I looked at, I guess the easiest way to describe it is affinage, but
yeah.
I was sort of mostly interested at first in shops in Europe that had their own caves. In other words, cheesemongers, that were doing this work themselves, or, a part of this work.
Sure.
It kind of grew to include, more intensive affineurs. I spent some time at Marcel Petit. I spent a lot of time at Mons, at Picard, which is a Reblochon affineur in the Haute-Savoie. But ultimately kind of looking at this whole system, basically, of cheese getting from producer to consumer. Over those 6 weeks, I started at Neal's Yard Dairy, of course, in London. I spent a couple of weeks at Mons after that in France. From there, I did go to Picard and to a couple of shops in Annecy, and then kind of made my way up to Fort Saint-Antoine, Marcel Petit, in the Jura. I spent about a week in Paris, and that was really visiting several shops, that all kind of do their own version of affinage.
Who did you see there?
In Paris,
yeah.
I got to spend some time at Laurent Dubois. He has three shops throughout Paris. They're very interesting. They do a lot of direct sourcing from farmers, which was somewhat unique, for a shop of that size, I would say. I also got to spend some time at Marie Catrome,
sure.
Sort of legend, a legendary cheesemonger.
That's a great shop. I've been in there.
Yeah, it was nice, and the people there were great. They reminded me in a lot of ways of just American cheesemongers, just young and
ambitious,
having a lot of fun, behind the counter. So that was nice. It was kind of familiar in a way. But then also to see their caves and, to see all of the cheese moving through that shop was great too.
And it must have been interesting for you to see the difference between affinage done on a store level, which a lot of times is cheese care. And I remember when I spoke to you last year, you had come, you came through Formaggio, and they have caves there. Oh, I wanted to mention, you got back-to-back Formaggio alumnus winners on the line today, right?
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You guys, they grow good cheesemongers up there in Boston,
That's right.
I mean,
it's the water.
Yeah, it is. The dirty water. it must have been really interesting for you to see the difference between like affinage on a shop level and then someplace like Picard or Mons that take all of that, the cheeses at a very young age and really finish them. And I was wondering if you could maybe just expound on the difference that you saw there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and this is kind of, this is something I thought about a lot because I think a lot of it, I know there's debate about affinage, and what actually counts as affinage. I think there is a bit of a semantic debate over the word. And of course, things that happen, the way a cheese is cared for early in its life is going to be a lot different than the way it's cared for, right before it's sold.
Absolutely.
And I think even some of the cheesemakers I talked to, said, well, it's not affinage if you're not caring for the cheese when it's, at its fussiest, right out of the brine, and that's anything else is not really affinage. I understand that. I understand that point of view. I think the thing that really struck me in seeing, this range of different affineurs and different, folks who are caring for these cheeses at different stages, is just at every stage there was such attention to detail. If these were shops that were sort of caring for cheese right before they went out the door to a customer, to them it was still very important. They took very seriously the role that they had in making sure there was no, gap in quality, no break in quality between when the cheese left the producer and when it got to the consumer. They all, they had these caves. they worked in them every day. It wasn't just for show, you know.
I think that's
One fellow I visited, Jacques Dubelot, you know, who I know is known to people in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
You know, his caves are in his parents' house.
That's crazy.
Across town, you know, so it's not even like his customers can see them, you know. But it's still where he is every day, you know, caring for these cheeses. So I think that was just an interesting thing for me to see and a way for me to kind of tie all of these different kinds of experiences together.
Well, that's the thing is, when you speak about affinage or having a cheese cave in your cheese shop, and is it necessary, I think, is something that is up for, it's not up for debate, but it depends on the shop. So you have a shop like mine, and Tom, feel free to jump in with your opinions. Like shop like Italy, like we move so much product, but we still do cheese care. You know, we take the cheese, we take it out of the boxes that it comes in. Sometimes we wrap it in, you know, we wrap it in paper that needs to be wrapped in. We take care of the rinds, we scrape it down, but it all goes out the door so fast. We don't need a cheese cave, you know.
Right.
Maybe
right.
We needed one not at the shop, but I think that other stores that get cheese and they aren't in control of the lots that they get, or they don't know exactly when they're getting it in what stage, it might make sense for them to be able to incubate the cheese a little bit. And maybe you saw that when you were there.
Right. No, I definitely agree. I mean, I don't believe everybody needs a cave in their shop. And I guess by the same token, I would say just because you have a cave doesn't necessarily mean you're going to, you know, your cheese is going to be better necessarily, right? I mean, I think a lot of it is sort of, you know, the attention that you're paying to the cheese, the level of relationship that you have with your producers, right? Knowing what you're getting. I mean, and that was huge for everybody I met in Europe, you know, having that kind of relationship from the larger affineurs all the way to the shops. You know, they all stress that, you know, as being really critical. I think it's true that a lot of it is just sort of figuring out what your mission is, you know, and how you're going to achieve that. And if it is, maybe it is having a cave, maybe it is figuring out sort of, you know, different climates in your walk-in or different climates in your cheese case, or as you said, you know, wrapping cheeses, you know, doing the triage when the cheese comes in, just kind of having that sort of direct contact with what you're working with, and ensuring that, you know, that what you're selling is as good as it can be.
So, and from all of that experience, what are you going to be able to give back, you know, when you get here? You know, what were you able to take from all of that, that you're going to be able to, you know, you're going to be able to transport into your job at Tamales Bay and going forward as a professional, you know?
Yeah. It's a good question. I can't speak. I can't yet speak specifically for Tamales Bay Foods. It's something we've been talking about for sure. It's a little different here, as you know, because we're a distributor. We have shops. You know, we have two shops, but you know, the work that I do is mostly on the distribution side. I look forward to kind of talking about about these topics more. I think that we do get very focused on sort of what is affinage, you know, is a cave really necessary, you know, and these are definitely legitimate questions. To me, sort of the thing that I've been thinking about most is, you know, again, what if you can't have a cave, right? How do you still incorporate some of these
cheese care?
Exactly, these techniques, this way of thinking into what you do. If you do have the wherewithal to have a cave, great. You know, I have lots of notes on that, and sort of specific things that these folks were doing. But I would say along with that, I think just the idea of cheese care, as you said, and sort of how to make that happen in your space is something that, you know, that really interests me.
Well, it sounds like your journey, like any really great introspective journey, raised more questions for you, which is pretty awesome.
Exactly.
And I think probably one of the goals of the scholarship itself is to get you out there and asking more questions and learning just enough to know that you know that you don't know, and you
right,
can,
right.
And getting out there. I had one other nuts and bolts question for you, and I think it'll become. it's pertinent. Had you ever been on the road that long in Europe? Had you ever like traveled that long for your job? You know, because it's a grind out there. I mean, it's fun as hell to be out there, but it's different.
It's true. Let's see. So I have that trip matched the previous my previous record for time on the road. 6 weeks is about as long as I have traveled in Europe before at any one time. And yes, it was a lot. I was largely by myself for most of the time, which was, you know, which was a different thing for me.
Yeah.
But I will say at the end, I could have kept going.
Yeah, you could never come back, right? Just keep going.
Yeah. Because like you said, I mean, it really was just every place it was, I have more questions. You know, I have more questions. I have more that I would like to see. You
That's
know?
Great.
So yeah, it was a lot of work, but you know, the best kind, I think.
No, it is. That's travel, and I mean, I think that, you know, Tom, I'm sure you're itching to get down and get you know, get the hell out of the country and start traveling and digging your claws into what you want to learn and all the questions you have to ask. So we're going to take a little bit of a break. Emily, thanks for sharing your experience with us, but why don't you stay on the line because we're going to ask some questions, and we'll be right back to talk to Tom about his upcoming journey.
Hello out there, it's Steve Jenkins. I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. We just had a nice little commercial there by Steve Jenkins. I'm going to definitely get Steve in here to yell at me for a half an hour if I can, as he is prone to do, yell at me and call me names, which is I couldn't enjoy more, let me tell you. You guys can hear that commercial, right? Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure. So in part one, we talked to Emily about her journey, and that was pretty awesome. It just made me itchy to get back over to Europe. I'm going to head over to Bra in a little bit, and hopefully I'll get that travel bug out of me too. But I want to switch over to talk to Tom, and again, congrats. So when you were sitting there listening to Emily talk, was that getting your gears going up there about what you're going to do when you get over there?
Well, yeah, I emailed Emily a couple of days ago saying we need to talk about a couple of places that you went to that I'm also interested in visiting. So, but I've been planning almost since like as soon as I got home from Providence at ACF. I was able to have some really good conversations there, and that really got my thought process flowing, and also, you know, building on, you know, personal relationships and, setting up future play dates, as I've been calling them.
Play dates.
So
I was wondering if you could tell us about, like, yourself and your journey to applying. Like, did the other applicants inspire you? I mean, there's the obvious I mean, you know, getting money to travel and the nuts and bolts of that. But what really hooked you into wanting to apply for this scholarship, and what was your original plan?
So I've always wanted to apply. The one thing that held me up was the one requirement that you be an ACS membership a member. And unfortunately, I was not one until this year through the business membership with Potash Markets here in Chicago. When I found out about it, I was like, this is great. You get to travel. You get to learn about cheese.
Yeah.
You get to tell everybody about it. And I've always had this question in my mind, like, what did American cheese taste like before, you know, we had commercial starter cultures? And that was basically the one question that got this ball rolling. And, you know, my vision, in case you're not familiar with it, is to investigate how our European counterparts track down and harness the microbial cultures that they're using in their PDO cheeses, specifically Comté. At one of the playdates I already have set up is with the Barber family and the West Country of England, who according to lore, that I guess what would be the grandfathers, the great grandfathers, stole their cultures off the back of a truck during a health scare in England. And those cultures have essentially been propagated and are using the best cheddars that we have today, including Keens and Montgomery's. So, the fact that everybody's been so generous already, like, we're like, what, 10 days out of ACS, it is very heartening, and it speaks to the amity that a lot of people held towards Daphne. Want to share with people that are working on her behalf.
Yeah, it sounds so. You're both a cheesemaker and a cheesemonger, so it sounds like both of those guys are going to be traveling to Europe, you know, to learn, and that's going to be interesting for you. I remember you telling me the story of the Barber family, or briefly when we talked at the ACS, as it's all coming back to me now. As that whirlwind. That's a really specific goal. Are you you prepared? So you're gonna start in England and you're gonna work your way out from there.
Odds are I'm actually gonna start in the continent. It's just a matter of nailing down dates and when's gonna work for everybody. I'd like to visit some Comté producers. I've already been in touch with Comté USA, and Rachel Jewell from Ethics Cheese has already been nice enough to reach out to Marcel Petit. I've talked with Jonathan Richardson from Colombia and Adam Moskowitz as well about connecting me with some of their producers, in particular Walter Ross, because he went from a system of being highly regimented in his culture requirements to, you know, creating more of a wild cultural ecosystem developed at home.
When you're going to take those, what's your end, if you have one, and it might come to you? What's your goal, or what do you want to bring that back in order to improve American cheese making, or to give younger cheesemakers a better understanding of ancient process and the cultures used? What are you thinking there?
Well, I think what I'd ultimately like to happen, and it's a very long process. If you have the opportunity to read my vision, I mean, it's set 20 years in the future. Nailing down cultural starter cultures and adjunct cultures is a very long process. Fortunately, we have, you know, a lot of kind of back research from our European counterparts and how to develop those. And, you know, obviously technology has improved leaps and bounds in the 50 some odd years since they really nailed them down. And if anybody listening has, you know, any information, or I'm completely off base, do not hesitate to reach out to me. I've got six
callers on the line who are ready to refute all of the things you've said already. I mean, it's the most I've ever had. No.
So what I'd like us to do is essentially develop our own native culture. That's the dream. I was sent a 135-page document on how Wisconsin was trying to develop a PDO for the Driftless region. But then it lost some funding, and it lost a little bit of steam. And also, you know, microbiological diversity, like, varies from pasture to pasture, never mind, like, a broad scope of a region, which is great. But, I mean, it's incredibly daunting and complex for us to nail all down. But there have got to be some great native cultures that we're not aware of or that we're not taking advantage of to form truly American original cheeses.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And that is, and you got it, I think, you have to take the long view, and that's the point of the scholarship, is to get you out there and into asking yourself more questions. I think it always just comes, and it's always going to come down to more questions, right? I mean, you're never going to find the one answer that you're looking for. Yeah.
No, and even from, you know, immediately after I submitted to, you know, getting to ACS, I mean, it just, you know, I thought I had a very clear path in where I'm going to be going, but in reality, there are easily five different paths in the way I can go. And the best piece of advice I got was from Bronwyn at Neil's Yard. She said, just be open, listen to everybody, and once you're able to breathe, reflect on that data, and it'll all become clear, and you'll find a way to tie it all together and produce a cohesive, presentation. So I'm just being very open-minded about this topic. And I didn't realize how many people were into this until I started talking to people. I thought this was something only I cared about. But to have so many people that are obviously interested in this and in our industry, it is astounding, and it's heartwarming, and it is just incredible.
Yeah, it's awesome. This is Emily Acosta, by the way. When I heard you, hey, how's it going? When I heard you up there giving your acceptance speech at ACS, I was so happy for you. And I was, when you mentioned your topic, I was fascinated. So I can't wait to hear your presentation next year in Des Moines. But I know. I know. Yeah. We'll see what happens. I was actually wondering, have you traveled for cheese before? Have you done a trip like this?
Not internationally. I mean, I've definitely traveled for cheese domestically. I've made a number of buying trips up to the cellars at Jasper Hill, and just would visit cheesemakers a lot. But internationally, other than like kind of happenstance, like, oh, look, a cheese shop, not really. So this will be a nice new adventure to put in the log.
Yeah, I'm just about to go on my cheese journey to France on September 3rd, and I've never traveled internationally for cheese purposes, so I'm very excited, but I'm also really nervous for some reason. I'm like, I know. But is there something that you're most excited about for your trip abroad? Or, like, I know it's still in the planning stages, but is there one thing that you're like, I have to go there and I have to do this?
The one thing that, like, even though, like, it's, you know, tangential to the research and is more a side benefit, and, you know, it is being able to do a shift at Neil's Yard. That is what I'm excited the most about. It's something that I've, dreamed about or thought about for years. And, you know, Jason Hines has been very, and James and the whole crew have been very generous and welcoming. And, you know, I just can't wait to do a stint behind their counter. But I'm also looking forward to talking to a lot of people that are very passionate about this topic. And you know, the Mary Quick and has been very excited and is looking forward to having me there. So it's been going great already.
That's great.
But yeah.
Emily, other Emily, how are you? How's it going? I was wondering if you had any advice for Tom. I'm sure that you have given Tom plenty of advice already, but advice for Tom, advice for the rest of us who are going to travel for cheese or want to travel for cheese.
I think
you know, I think having an idea in your head of, you know, what it is that you want to see and what you want to do, having those questions, but also, as Tom kind of alluded to, you know, being open to any possibility, because, you know, it's never going to go exactly the way that you think it's going to, and that's good. You know, you're going to find something else that you weren't even thinking about, you know, that is of interest, or you're going to have an opportunity to go to this place that wasn't even on your radar before. So I think being open to all of those things that come up naturally as you travel are very important. You know, practically speaking, too, I would say language is brushing up a little bit
French?
on some key words. If you don't, you know, if you don't speak the actual language of the place you're visiting, you know, it doesn't hurt.
That's the thing I'm actually nervous about. I'm terrible with like I can't speak French.
Just don't run out of money.
Yeah,
I know that sounds so stupid, but money will get you out of any of your problems. All right. So I know that sounds bad, but I've traveled a lot, and as long as I had a few euros in my pocket, I knew I could always get a meal or a glass of wine or talk to people that I didn't expect would inspire me, or along the road and those journeys. I would argue that going to Neil's Yard and working a shift behind the counter isn't tangential to your that is your experience. I mean, you're a cheesemonger, you know, so I think that you'll get so much out of that, and just being able to handle the cheese in a way that's familiar to you, it's going to inspire you and make you ask questions. You know what I mean? So I think that's a right on way to look at it. You know what I mean? Because you're in there to some really heady stuff. You know, I mean, and so the simplicity of putting a knife, you know, through the paste of some right. cheese is going to feel pretty good to you. You know, and might center you a little bit when you're on your journey, especially if it's the first long journey of its kind that you're going to make, if I could throw that out there to you, you know?
Familiarity of just handling cheese and, you know, handing it over to the customer is going to be quite a relief, I am sure.
And then, Emily, and I don't know if you like that, that's what I, whenever I traveled or whenever I've gone to Europe or anywhere else, and what the people change, but the cheese is always the cheese. You know what I mean? And I know it sounds kind of foolish, but the smell of it and the handling of it, the smell of the caves and the counters and all of the places that you'll be will be what, you know, all those like sensory things will just that'll just keep you right there. Do you know what I mean? Get you through any tough spots in your road. Or that always helped me out when I travel. Yeah. You know,
I think it's very true.
Cool.
Yeah, man. Well, I want to thank all of the folks that have been in. I'm sometimes a lonely man in the booth here, but I have Emily with me, Acosta. Thank you, and thank you, Emily Sharton and Tom, for your time today. Congrats on your journey, Emily, and congrats on your upcoming journey, Tom. And this is our last show of the season. We're going to take a little bit of a break. So I want to thank Liz, our engineer,
Liz,
who's the best, who keeps me in line and tells me what time it is when I need to shut up.
And actually, when we're back in September, the Heritage Radio Network, heritageradionetwork.org, we're going to have an amazing new website. We just had this meeting where we for all you listeners, if you want to engage with us, ask us questions, if you have any show ideas, if you want to participate in any episodes, that can all be done through our new website. So it's going to be awesome. And it's being launched at the end of September, mid-September.
Whenever they get it together.
Yeah. It's coming together.
So thanks a lot. And you guys have great trips and the like. And we'll be back soon with more Cutting the Curd. Ciao.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world, or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.